To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, the show about comics where we blow your mind one comic book at a time. Well, today is going to be quite exciting because we are talking about the early Playboy cartoons. That was the Batman theme song. It's kind of a go-go tune from the 60s to go in time with our theme. And just to start us off, I wanted to talk about how it all came to be. You see, good old Hugh Hefner, the man with the plan to start Playboy. He started it in 1953 was the first issue, and he was a frustrated cartoonist. He'd had done a lot of cartooning in high school, and then he went off to the army, to the war, and he'd done 2 years of cartooning there. He even went on to earn a degree from the Chicago Institute of Art in less than 2 years. But he just, I don't know, he didn't put his comics in his own magazine, and instead he went out and got his friends and people that submitted stuff that he liked, and he put them in his magazine. And it, to me, it makes Playboy one of the coolest things ever. Admittedly, you know, the naked ladies are all really well and good, but the cartoon art is really great. Now, the first time I'd ever heard about any of this was when I was playing Trivial Pursuit with my parents, and one of the questions was, what famous cartoonist got his start Playboy magazine? And I was like, who's that? And it was Shel Silverstein, of all people. And, you know, as a child, I'd read a lot of his poetry, and I'd listened to lots of his music, and I had no idea that this man was a very well-known cartoonist for Playboy magazine. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the introduction from Shel Silverstein's Around the World, because thank God Playboy put out a collection of all the work that Shel Silverstein had done for Playboy. Now, the greatest thing, it's, you know, it was a great thing for Shel Silverstein because he wasn't your stereotypical cartoonist. He was kind of like, you know, did his own thing, his own way when he felt like it. And so basically what happened was Hugh Hefner just gave him money and said, go out and report on, I don't know, Italy, or go out and talk about those kids that decide to run around naked. You know, those nudists. So let me read a bit of the foreword to you by Hugh Hefner, and he'll give you a real flashback to how Shel came to be at Playboy. Shel Silverstein was one of the most creative individuals I'd ever known. His contributions to Playboy are legendary. As you can see in this book, his work stands the test of time. Shel was a true Renaissance man. He was a person of multiple talents that went beyond art and humor that I initially saw in him. Shel began his career as a cartoonist, but he went on to greater glory. He became an author of best-selling children's books, a songwriter, poet, and playwright. He became our house humorist, and most importantly to me, he became a confidant and one of my closest friends. I remember well the first time I met Shel Silverstein. It was in Chicago in 1956. A veteran who had just returned from the States for military duty in Japan, he had heard word about a new upstart magazine named Playboy. He decided to take his drawings to the Playboy office. He left the portfolio with my secretary, but I didn't get around to reading it right away. After a couple of weeks, Shel came back to the office and demanded his cartoons back. He didn't think we were going to buy any of them. I asked him to wait while I looked them over. I went through his portfolio. There was maybe 15 drawings in all, and I took out 8, put them on my desk, and said, let's see, what's that, $500, $600? Shel nodded his head. I suppose you could use it now, I said. Yeah, he said. So I took out my checkbook and I wrote him a check. I sensed some uncertainty on his part. Maybe it was because I needed to shave and I was wearing my pajamas. Shell didn't think the magazine was going to last or the check would even clear. It was 4:45 on Friday afternoon. The banks were closed. Shell took off in disbelief, found a currency exchange someplace, and cashed the check right away. We always got a kick about that later on in years, how implausible it all seems now. So that was the beginning of his great career at Playboy, and Hugh Hefner just sent him away. He sent him to China. He sent him to Turkey. He sent him to Spain to see the bullfights. He sent him to a nudist colony, and he sent him all these great places. The first one they did was return to Tokyo, and I was just going to read a little bit of it because the beginning is actually done by Shell, the writing, and then there's all these great comics. So, Sheckless Shell Silverstein, the brilliant bearded cartoonist whose work regularly appears in Playboy, served most of a 2-year army hitch with the staff of Pacific Stars and Stripes, bringing a bit of satirical sunlight into the dark days of Korean occupation. The indigestion that followed the GI's bouts with the Army Chow was alleviated by some extent when they would open the pages of Stars and Stripes and see a Silverstein mess sergeant admonishing his underlings with a, "Okay, who's been sneaking meat into the hamburger?" And every Joe who ever received a dressing down from the military police could chuckle sardonically over the drawings in which one surly MP whispered to another, "Psst, Merry Christmas." So it goes on to talk about his experiences in Japan, and then there's a whole bunch of neat little cartoons where he just, basically it's just his commentary on life. Like one of the great cartoons here is a little old Chinese lady, or a little Japanese lady taking a picture of Shel Silverstein while Shel Silverstein is taking a picture of her. They're both picture worthy in Japan. And there's just all sorts of stuff when he's talking to geishas and contemplating Buddha and just learning. That's the greatest thing. He goes on to Scandinavia in 57. He hits Paris in 58. And they're just beautiful free drawings of just random observations of his experiences. One of the greatest things, there's one here. "Look at this place, Paul. No heat, no electricity, crawling with bugs, no icebox, no ventilation, no bathtub, no toilet, nothing to eat but a few scraps of bread and cheap wine. Frankly, I don't know how you managed to stay alive. Paul? Paul? Paul?" So it, like, they're just really cute. Also, the thing that I like about him too is that there's lots of stuff about his experiences with women, and he really downplays his charmingness and sort of makes himself seem like this all-around schlub who's lucky to get any attention from any kind of women and from these various countries. So it's really funny. There's one here where he hits Switzerland where he goes, "You realize, of course, Miss Gruber, that the slightest noise on your part could send thousands of tons of snow and ice avalanching down, crushing us to an agonizing, suffocating end and bringing death and destruction to the innocent people of the picturesque village below as they cuddle up on the cave corner." He also went to Spain in 59, and he went to, he went amongst the Arabs in 59 as well. But my favorite, of course, was the nudist colony, because not only are there pictures of naked ladies, but he draws himself quite honestly, and everyone around him quite honestly. Like, that's the greatest thing, too, about Silverstein's work, is that there's no pretty people, you know what I mean? Like, it's not super gorgeous people everywhere running around. There's chunks and flabs and big noses and messy hair and, you know, sagging body parts, and it's pretty funny. So here, I'll just read a little bit. "In the 16 years that cartoonist Shel Silverstein has been roaming the globe for Playboy, drawing funny conclusions from Madrid to Moscow to Miami Beach, no assignment has proven more challenging or more off the beaten track than his most recent, to depict the unabashed life of a typical USA nudist camp." So it shows pictures of him coming in and shaking hands with people with his giant drawing board and taking walks in his little naked body while playing shuffleboard with other naked people. But it's, you know, you got to understand, it's part and parcel of Playboy, so it makes sense. Anyways, let's see. There were a lot of really great cartoonists that made their appearance in Playboy, and we're going to be talking about some of them, all of them, lots of them, not just Shel Silverstein. Jules Pfeiffer made a couple of appearances within a 10-year span from 1958 to 1968. There's also, of course, the amazing Little Annie Fanny, which we'll be talking about a little bit later with Harvey Kurtzman and Will Elder illustrating. And there's Gan Wilson, who did stuff, and Aldon Dedini and Jack Cole as well. So stay tuned. There's going to be lots more talk about great Playboy cartoonists. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. For you, musically, I brought some interesting stuff, a lot of old stuff. There's not going to be any new stuff. I'm sorry. just be prepared. I found some neat tracks about Playboys and Playboy itself. And also, I have my very own Shel Silverstein CD, so we'll play some music from that. But coming up right now, we are going to play something from a guy named Cy Coleman. He was the man, well, actually, he wrote a lot of music for like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, so you're going to recognize his voice for sure. But he also did Playboy's theme, because see, Playboy was not only a magazine. For a while there, it was like a, you know, it well, eventually became its own TV station, but it had its own show, you know, live at the Playboy Mansion or after hours at the Playboy Mansion. And whenever any of these kind of things occurred, Cy Coleman's Playboy theme was employed. So we're going to play that for you. And again, you're listening to 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, blowing your mind one comic book at a time. And we're talking about the cartoonists that are found within the pages of Playboy. Just the early years, not the later years, because there's a whole bunch of more people. And I think only currently Gann Wilson is the only one that's doing comics in there. But anyways, blah, 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 comics. Here's Cy Coleman, and you're listening to CJLO. And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about comics and we try to blow your mind one comic book at a time. Now, today's show is about the early years of Playboy magazine and how they had some excellent, excellent cartoonists involved. And the Impetuous actually was because I was looking at my shelves of stuff. And, I don't really want to talk about people that I could actually interview. So I was kind of focusing on the older and the dead. And I have these amazing books. They're Playboy cartoon albums. And they, like, I only managed to get two of them. Actually, a total of four, but two of them are on specific creators. But I only managed to get two of them, and there were seven. They started in 1963 and ended in 1980, and they were beautiful, full-color collections of some of the cartoons that would appear in Playboy magazine. I got these while working at the Book and Comic Store Emporium in Vancouver. You know, old used bookstores are the best for these kind of neat vintage treasures that you find. And inside, there's some really, you know, some funny stuff. And it's really tongue-in-cheek. It's sort of kind of like, you know, Benny Hill. It's, of course, there's lots of nudity, but it's really cute. And, you know, it's not all that offensive. But, of course, I'm sure back in the 50s it was offensive. So let's read some here. There's Eldon D. Deeney. He's actually a very popular artist in the Playboy cartooning sphere because he is a very soft style. He used to do watercolors and very Rubenesque women, and he had a tendency to use pan characters, whether they were women or men, with, you know, the goat hooves and feet and stuff. So there's all this art style that he does. It's all the same, and you can definitely identify it because it's very distinctive. But anyways, the first one he's got here, it's really cute. Is it just me, or have you sensed a pagan revival in this country recently as these two pan-like minotaurs sit around and notice all these women fawning around that are naked? Let's see what else. There's the other one I like is Kilbran. You can see him here and there throughout. He's got lots of good gags. Sometimes they were really Art Nouveau in their style. Like, it wasn't necessarily, like, traditional. Like, there's this one guy, Rhea Gardner, who is very simple in her style. And then, you know, you have, like, guys like, oh, see, the problem is they never gave titles to these. When they did these albums, they didn't give credit to the people. Like, it was only just their signature, so I'm kind of guessing here. And the other thing, too, is really interesting. When I started researching for these books online, a lot of the artists had no mention or just said they did art for Playboy. Like, they didn't really expand on it. Like, for example, I was looking up Jules Feiffer, and I actually had to go to one of my old books, to see what it said, because currently you can't really find a lot of information about the work that he did for Playboy, except that he did it. Same with Shel Silverstein. He has this extensive, gorgeous, beautiful website, shelsilverstein.com, and I'm assuming because it's for kids, they don't really want to go into great detail about his adult material, which makes sense. But I mean, I would thought for sure there'd be some kind of website or something documenting the Playboy cartoonists. They did do a collection, Fantagraphics, in 2004 of 50 years of Playboy cartoons. And again, like, it wasn't very extensive. Like, it just had the actual art and the cartoons, and you can, you know, full color, beautiful and lush. And they had little bios on each artist, but it didn't tell you when they started and when they ended and when these comic or cartoons appeared. So I keep saying cartoons, but really cartoons is kind of a word for one panel gags, because the majority of the gags in comics in Playboy were just the one panel gag strips. So they're not cartoons like animation. They're cartoons like comics. But the colors are so lush. And I mean, that's the greatest thing. I'm sure because it was such a high paying magazine, you know, like the advertisers got in there and there was lots of money rolling around, they could get away with these beautiful full color things. But whereas most cartoons are black and white. But there's also black and white in here. It's great. Oh my gosh, I just noticed that one of my comics has Vincent van Gogh's ear actually cut out. Oh my god. I didn't do it. Anyways, so Playboy, Playboy, Playboy in the 50s and 60s. So I wanted to read another couple of Shel Silverstein things to you, and then we're going to play a track by Mr. Shel Silverstein. I really like his work the best. I mean, his style is not as, as sophisticated as a lot of the cartoonists that were found in Playboy, but he has this beautiful free line work, and it's kind of hippie-ish, kind of beatnik-ish, but it's so free is the best way to describe it, because it's just, I don't know if he did these things really fast or it was just his way, but he suggested so much with a great economy of line. So this one here is Shel Silverstein in Miami, because my parents are going to go there soon. And it's two women, and they're speaking to each other as Shel walks by. And the one woman says to the other, because you have to understand, and I know this from reading romance comics, a lot of women back in the 50s and 60s, I'm generalizing, obviously, not all the women, just a good chunk of them, would go to these resorts to catch a husband or find a husband. So, like, I'll give you an example. Here's Shel talking to this beautiful debutante in the lobby of a hotel, and she's saying, "So I decided that instead of wasting my money on a week on a dumpy hotel, I'd invest it all in one day in the best hotel. So I have till 4 o'clock to find a husband. That's checkout time." And so anyways, these two women are talking, and Shel's walking by, and the woman says to the other woman, "First I heard he was single, so I wanted to meet him. Then somebody said he was Cuban, so I didn't want to meet him. Then somebody said he was Jewish, so I wanted to meet him. Then somebody said he was a rabbi, so I really wanted to meet him. But then I found out he was a cartoonist, so to hell with him." Which I find very funny. And of course, there's all these great photos, too, of like Shel fishing and water skiing and checking out the ladies. And I highly recommend this book. It's called Playboy Silverstein. And some of these pieces are already in my Playboy cartoon albums, but it's worth it just to have them all together. They're not complete, and I love it. So it all works out. And what else? Okay, the other two albums that I've got are this guy, Gan Wilson. And Gan Wilson is great. He is very similar to the style of Charles Adams. You know, you've heard that name before because he created the Addams Family. The Addams Family cartoon comics, if you've ever seen them, they're very, very dark and subtle, a lot like Edward Gorey, but really nicely drawn with heavy line work. And so Gan Wilson is kind of like a hippie version of Charles Adams. Like, again, he has that real free line stroke like Shel Silverstein. But how to describe it? It's free in its tightness. That makes no sense, does it? Whereas Shel Silverstein's lines go all over the place. They kind of have a mind of their own. They're off in the distance. They don't really connect half the time. They're just really free association lines. Gan Wilson's stuff is very tight. And it might be a little wobbly looking, but that's part of the style. He's kind of got this goofy thing happening. And they're also, the cartoons are very dark. Now, the cool thing about this Playboy is that there's a nice little intro by Gan himself. And so you get an idea of kind of like the dark humor that he has. I'm just going to read one paragraph. I'm not going to bore you to death. "There is, I'm proud and happy to say, a persistent rumor abroad that says I am put away once a year in asylum for the insane. The theory behind this legend has it that the strain of creating cartoons, such as the one in this book, proves too much for me annually, and so I am carted away and boxed off until the good doctors, possibly by a head transplant, possibly by other means, manage to get me once more into feasible shape. Then I am relaxed to mingle with humanity at large until the next visit to my waiting padded cell." So I think that's really cute that they let him do that. And of course, again, it's another Playboy cartoon album, so it's in full color. It's so beautiful. And there is black and white, but lots of full one page, like the gags are on one big page. I love that. But also four gags to a page as well. And lots of stuff, like I'm looking at one where the Venus flytrap is peering around the corner where the man is eating his meat. And he's like, "You know very well you're not supposed to beg at the table." Or some other guy's going, "Oh, old Jack Frost nipping at your nose, eh?" And there's like this little evil sprite chewing on some guy's nose. So there's lots of, like, it's really dark. And the characters, you know, they have giant bulbous noses and sad, saggy eyes and big toothy grins. And there, it's just this whole different world where people kind of look normal, but not quite. Or they'll be frogs, but you're not sure. It's like, it owes a lot to Edward Gorey, but it's kind of cute in its weirdness. It's hard to explain. Gan Wilson. You can check him out. So they've done like lots of collections. He's still probably the only one. In fact, I would say for sure he's the only one that's still doing illustrations for Playboy out of the few that we've mentioned. Unfortunately, a good chunk of them are dead. But way to go, Gan, for still contributing to Playboy in this day and age. Anyways, so if you like the kind of bizarre, that's who you should check out. We're going to go to a track now. We're going to play Shel Silverstein from my Best of Shel Silverstein album. This is a really weird album because it's a lot of kid stuff mixed in with some of his adult stuff. So I can't really play it at straight through at the daycare, which is it's kind of funny. So I'm going to play for you Freakin' at the Freakers Ball, because I'm sure Mr. Silverstein got up to some really freaky stuff when he was hanging out with those Playboy kids. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, and this is Shel Silverstein.
"Well, there's gonna be a Freakers Ball tonight at the Freakers Hall. And you know, you're invited, one and all. Uh-oh. Come on, babies. Grease your lips, grab your hats, and swing your hips. And don't forget to bring your whips. We're going to the Freakers Ball, yes. Blow your whistle, bang your gong. Roll up something to take along. It feels so good, it must be wrong. We're freaking at the Freakers Ball. Well, all the fags and the dykes, they boogie in together. The leather freaks are dressed in all kinds of leather. The greatest of the sanest and the masochists too. Screaming, please hit me, and I'll hit you. The
east. All the streets swinging with the funkies, across the floor and up the wall. We're freaking at the freaking ball, y'all. We're freaking at the freaking ball. Hey, hello. Oh, this is marvelous. Yeah. It's nice to see you. But I don't know. Everybody's kissing each other. Brother with sister, son with mother. Smear my body up with butter. Take me to the freaking ball. Pass that roast, please, and pour the wine. I'll kiss yours if you kiss mine. I'm gonna boogie till I go blind. We're freaking at the freaking ball. White ones, black ones, yellow ones, red ones. Necrophiliac looking for dead ones. The greatest of the sadists and the masochists too. Screaming, please end me, and I'll hear you. Everybody falling in batches. Pyromaniac striking matches. I'm gonna itch me where it scratches. Freaking at the freaking ball, y'all. We're freaking at the freaking ball. We're out of battle. We're freaking at the freaking ball.
If you're not very busy, just tune in to the twos for Go Funk Yourself with DJ F-U-N-K and Classy F. They're my boys. You know, see, we go way back since high school. Pay attention to Tuesdays, 12 to 2.
I met a vampire, but
he didn't want my blood. He only wanted two nickels for a dime.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show. And that was Shel Silverstein talking about monsters. Yes, and I know you're kind of sitting there wondering how he got to be so successful, because he's kind of a wacky performer, and he certainly is. But he actually wrote A Boy Named Sue for Johnny Cash, to name one person. And he's done lots of other stuff for other people. In the CD booklet, actually, Kris Kristofferson speaks very highly of him as a musician. He also did the cover of a Rolling Stone, and he's been around. My personal favorite is Boa Constrictor, having sung that many times as a child and now as a childhood educator. Shel, you are so amazing. I love the juxtaposition of the fact that he's got such a giant successful career with children as a poet as for children, but also on top of it, he's this amazing cartoonist for Playboy magazine. Anyways, now it's time for news, and there's lots of stuff happening in around Montreal and lots of things that have happened comic book wise in my life. Like, for example, I've just been devouring all of season 3 of Bones, and I love this show so much more than CSI. It's so great. And there was this really great moment that I totally memorized so I could tell you because it was so funny. So, okay, Seeley Booth, who used to be Angel, which is the main reason why I watch it, he's in the bathtub, and he's reading a Green Lantern comic, an issue, and he's just sitting there reading, right? And then Bones, like, bursts in, because she doesn't knock, and she's, like, you know, talks to him about their case or whatever, and then she looks at him, she's like, what are you reading? And he's like, a novel, and she looks at him again, because it's an issue of Green Lantern, and he's like, what? A graphic novel. And I just thought that was funny. Anyway, so let's get on to the news. On Tuesday, January the 20th at 7 p.m., Pascal Girard's Nicholas book launch and slideshow will be occurring at the Drawn and Quarterly building. That's at 2211 Bernard West up in Mile End. It's really easy to get to. And eventually, at some point, we are going to interview Pascal Girard, because I actually bought, it was like one of the first comics I bought when I moved to Montreal, and I bought it in French because it was so simple. And I'm like, okay, I can translate this pretty easy. This will be the beginning of my learning French through comics. And now they've actually released it in English through John and Cordelie's Petit Livre series. And so there will be a launch. Yay! Pascal Girard will be there. Yay! And there will be stories and stuff. So again, that's Tuesday, January 20th. That's next week, I believe. And it's at 7. So, yeah. And even just go to the Drawn Quarterly website, because there's so much cool stuff happening. For example, you can be part of a creative collaborative workshop with Billy Mavrias. Billy Mavrias is a man about town who has an excellent, excellent store of cool oddities and curiosities called Monsteraki. And it's also an art gallery. And he usually focuses on comic art. And I believe that Monsteraki is on, oh, let me think here. I want to say Saint Laurent. I could be wrong, but it's right across from Ubisoft. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Saint Laurent. Yeah, it is. And it's like Saint Laurent and Saint Viateur, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I just wander around there and I find it usually. But these actually courses, these creative collaborative workshop classes with Billy are going to be at the Drawn and Quarterly building, and it's a four-week course. It's going on from January 25th to February 15th, and it's in the evenings, and it's $60 for the whole session. What he's going to be doing is guiding a small group of adults through a journey that will investigate the accidental and explore and challenge concepts that art is only for artists. So I would, again, check out the Drawn and Quarterly website because it explains it all to you. Billy Mavrias is a very talented man, has a lot of art skills, and would be an excellent educator if that's something you're interested in doing. Also, I was putzing around on the internet and discovered that Dave Cooper designed a video for Danko Jones. And, you know, I'm not such a huge Danko Jones fan, but goddamn, I love Dave Cooper. So check that out. The song is called King of Magazines. You can find it on YouTube. And come on, it's animated Dave Cooper. How can you say no? And I know some of this news is old, but it's new to me. Also, another piece of old but fascinating new news is I found out that Gabrielle Bell, she does the comic Lucky and Book of Sleep. You know, I was introduced to her work in the weirdest way. I was in London, England, and I was like, okay, I want to get like a comic from a British cartoonist, maybe like a local British cartoonist. And, you know, no stores had anything, and a lot of the people at the stores were very rude to me. But then I went to one store, and it was called, oh, what was it called? Oh, Gosh. It was called Gosh. And it was right across, I think, from the British Museum of Man and Nature and Natural History or something. Anyways, Gosh was amazing, because they had a wicked alternative selection. They were very helpful and nice. And I found an alternative comic there, a local alternative comic. So I read it. It's called The Book of Sleep. It's really cool. I like the art. And then I look at the back and the address is San Francisco. And so yeah, that was Gabrielle Bell. That was my first introduction to Gabrielle Bell. And she has since had a collection of those books, which I really love, called, I've forgotten what it's called. When I Grow Old, I think it's called. But I've forgotten. But I own it. I should remember. Oh, my memory's so bad. The whole point of this dialogue, monologue, nobody talking to me, it's just one person, is Gabrielle Bell's story from her book, Cecil and Jordan, New York, called Interior Design, where a young woman turns into a chair, was just directed by Michel Gondry. And I'm like a huge fan. He did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He's done The Science of Sleep. He's done all sorts of, he did, you know, Be Kind Rewind, which was not so good, but, you know, the other ones were. And in amazing videos for Bjork and The White Stripes and, you know, like lots of cool people. So I'm just like, I'm not such a huge fan of Gabrielle's work anymore because I find it kind of bland and boring. I mean, she's very talented, but it just doesn't appeal to me anymore. But the fact that she's had one of her stories directed by Michel Gondry is like amazing. Anyways, it was a series of three short movies called Tokyo, and there was two other Japanese artists involved, directors involved. And also, there is a Drawn and Quarterly Petit Livre that Bell and Gondry did together to sort of in tribute to the film called Kurerama Toherimasu. I'm just guessing. Well, actually, that's what it's called. I'm just guessing on the pronunciation. So, yeah, I mean, wow, that's exciting. That's so exciting. I was like in my apartment going, holy crap, lucky Gabrielle Bell. Also in other news, did you know that Barack Obama was a comic nerd? And did you know that Marvel Comics decided to give him props and put him in an issue of Amazing Spider-Man? So it's issue 583. And it's the fact that, you know, Obama is totally proud of his comic nerd ways. And so this will be the first time that an American president has appeared in the comics, like actually in the comics, where the most of them just have made like an appearance, where in this one, like Spider-Man, what's the story? Okay. The Obama story reportedly starts with Spider-Man's alter ego, Peter Parker, taking photographs at the inauguration before spotting two identical Obamas. Parker decides the future president's going to need Spider-Man and springs into action using basketball to determine the real Obama and punching out the imposter. Marvel, I know you need the money. But so, yeah, if you want to see President Obama in a comic, there you go. It's in number 583 of Spider-Man. And actually, in other news, they've already sold out. They're already gone into second printing, which is kind of ridiculous. let's see. Oh, I just got this off of PrezHilton.com, which I think is really funny. There's this new amazing book out called Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel, which I'm very curious to read because I love toys or action figures and all that stuff. And it's about Jack Ryan, the designer who made Barbie popular. Apparently, he was a full-blown 70s-style swinger with a manic need for sexual gratification and was known to host orgies back in the day. He was married a few times, once to Zsa Gabor, and was described as surrounding himself with busty Barbie clones. That's an example of work coming home with you, if there ever was one. And last but not least, is it last? Let me just double check if it's the last beta news, because it's a pretty exciting bit of news. Oh, it's not the last. It's the second last. It's the third last. The second last is, I was reading on the Sequential website, and you guys should need to check this website out. It's a really great website where it focuses on Canadian comic book news. It's http://:// you know, all that stuff. Sequential://spiltink.org. Or you could just look up Sequential Canadian Comic News and you'll probably get it. But it's a great website put out by Max Douglas and put together by two other guys. And they were talking about how is the new economy going to affect the comic book world. And somebody was saying, well, you know, it's hitting Wizard and it's hitting all these other people. And I was like thinking to myself, how could it possibly affect Wizard? I mean, they totally market to where the money is. And actually how it has affected Wizard, since I've since been reading, is they've canceled two of their comic conventions, which is kind of interesting. And not only, you know, the one in Texas, which, okay, whatever, maybe it's not so big in Texas, but in Los Angeles as well, which kind of surprised me. So I bet the fanboys are freaking out as we speak. Also, in other news, The Watchmen. What are we going to do about The Watchmen? Basically, The Watchmen is not a go, as far as we know, because Fox is determined that they say they still have the rights to the movie, and Warner Brothers says they don't, and Fox is suing, and Warner Brothers wants the judge to step it up so they can get it going, so they can start promoting the movie before anything happens, and Fox is pissed, and Warner Brothers thinks they have no leg to stand on, and the judge said, I'm not going to rule just yet, I'm giving you a chance to work it out outside of the court. And I think coming up next week is when they're going to start dealing with it. Let's see here. According to court documents, Fox and Warner Brothers have conducted the settlement talks since last weekend and made concessions. This is surprising since WB lawyers announced that they would continue to fight immediately after Fess announced his intention to rule in favor of Fox for copyright infringement and distribution rights. So it's kind of crazy what's going to happen. I'm sure next week we'll find out more and I will keep you updated on that, because I know you, just like me, are very excited about the new Watchmen movie. Now in other news, and I'm very excited to talk about this because it's been a long time since I've been in a comic book store, and I know that sounds pathetic, but it's true. You know, don't really have a lot of money. That's the bottom line. And so because of that, I haven't been to see my regular comic guy, but I went today, and that's Studio 9. That's where I get my comics because they're good there. I went and I picked up some stuff. And of course I have no money. I was using my gift certificate that is like, I think, a year and a half old. I've been holding on to that gift certificate for so long. And so I got some of the Buffy comics I was talking about before I left for Christmas, the Carl Malene ones and the one that's based on the animated series. And Mark also had some super cheap romance comics, which made me so excited. $3 for one from 1949. That's amazing. My own romance. Only because it's a Canadian reprint, but that's okay. I don't mind. And then a DC one called Young Love. If you love me, say it. Tell me so. Oh, I don't dare tell you, because every time I opened up my heart, I lost the one I loved. I love these comics so much. And I got a new previews, which is always exciting. Lots of good stuff in there I was looking at. I was just kind of going crazy about the new stuff coming out. And I got a toy too, Francesca from Mad Monster Party. If you've ever seen that movie, it's excellent. And Mark was nice and gave me old previews. He just gave them to me. So I'm very excited about that, because like, Now I can catch up on all the old stuff that I've missed out on. Anyways, we're going to go to some more music, because I have some more Playboy songs for you. And then we're going to continue talking a little bit maybe about some Jules Feiffer and talk a little bit about some of the other people that contributed to Playboy cartoons, comics, and magazine during the 50s and 60s. But first, we're going to play The Drifters, He Is Just a Playboy. After that, we'll play some Jean and Debbie, who is also singing about a Playboy. And maybe some Fairlanes, who, again, are also singing about Playboys. There are lots of Playboys. They're everywhere, those Playboys. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we blow your mind one comic book at a time. And this is The Drifters.
Hey, little girl, I know you're crying. What a bad time to offer my advice. Oh, but no matter how many tears you shed, dear, you'll never melt away his cold, cold heart of ice. Well, here he comes now.
He's just a playboy.
Oh, then he runs.
He runs from girl to girl.
Trying to prove.
To prove he's king of the world.
This is A-Dubs, and when I'm not hosting Eclectricity, I'm listening to Go Funk Yourself every Tuesday from noon to 2 right here on CJLO.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show. That was a great song. Oh, there's more. There's more. I forgot to press stop. There's just so many buttons to push. Anyways, that was the Marvelettes. We're going to play that next. And before that was the Fairlanes. I'm doing Playboy. And I really liked that song. And I tried to find out more about this group, and I couldn't find anything except they were on the Explosive Doo-Wop album, volume number 8. And I just think that's really cool. I want to hear it again. Before that was Gene and Debbie playing, singing Playboy. And then before that it was the Drifters with He's Just a Playboy. So it's a lot of sort of retro 60s and 50s music, you know, to go in part and parcel with what we're talking about today. And what we are talking about today is the early years of Playboy cartoonists. There was some Shel Silverstein. There was some Eldon Dedini. There was some Jules Feiffer, who we've actually not talked about. We did kind of talk about Jules Feiffer. For 10 years, he contributed stuff, and it was very similar to his Village Voice pieces. But, I mean, of course, he was given a little bit freer rein because it was a more adult sort of content publication. And one person I wanted to talk about quickly before we totally run out of time is Jack Cole. Jack Cole, of course, was the cartoonist that was doing Plastic Man. He had a fantastic, beautiful eye and a great sense of humor. And his Playboy style was very similar to that of Eldon Dedini, where it was very lush and full and watercolors. And when I say lush, it's like you look at these women, you kind of want to chew on them because they're just so voluptuous and so nice looking. Anyways, Jack Cole contributed to his death, and unfortunately, when he committed suicide back in the 50s, 1958. Which is a sad thing, because it was kind of like a revamp period for him, where he was getting back out there again and putting out new comics. No one really knows why he killed himself. I mean, some people think it has to do with his wife. Maybe it was because he just thought, I don't know, that Playboy cartooning wasn't as great. I don't know, because he's dead. It'd be good to talk to him, wouldn't it? I'll hold a seance. We'll get him on the phone line. Anyways, I also wanted to talk a bit about Phil Erlandi, because again, I have these amazing Playboy albums, cartoon albums, where they've collected all the artists and a lot of different styles. And unfortunately, like, they don't give the names for the artists. You just see their signatures, whether they're Mr. Sokol or Mr. Buck Brown or Mr. Don Orehek. And it doesn't have any bios on them or anything. I, you know, to be honest, I'm kind of thinking I should do it, because I thought for sure there would be some kind of site online that would be like a real definitive Playboy cartoonist site, because these pieces were beautiful. They weren't like just, you know, jotted off, phoned in cartoon strips. They weren't all political. They were a lot of fun, very tongue-in-cheek, sort of like a lot like Benny Hill. And cute. Like, they were really cute. It's one of the reasons why I used to collect this comic called Grin and Bear It. It was published by NBM. And they were just, you know, they were one-page gags. And I just, like, it's, to me, it's sort of bathroom humor, you know? You read it, you enjoy it, you put it down, you forget about it. But because there's, like, nudity or it deals with sex, it's considered adult. So a lot of these Playboy comics are like that. But anyways, Phil Erlandi was one of the really nice cartoonists. All his girls had these super heavy eyelids. It says here, the cartoonist is a writer, director, producer, all in one. He writes the script, casts the parts, designs the sets and costumes, plans the camera angles. It's capsule theater, a one-frame movie. As for Mr. Interlandi's work habits, he says, would you believe I've actually dreamed many of my ideas? It's true. When you've trained your mind to think in terms of cartoons, virtually every experience is filled always with the unconscious of for future use. So a little bit of history about this guy. He was the son of Sicilian immigrants. He was born in Chicago and attended the John Marshall High School. His art training took place at the Chicago Academy of Fine Arts. And like a lot of the Playboy cartoonists, he did time in the army. I wonder if that's the trick. Or not the trick. I wonder if that's the theme. The fact that they've been away for so long, they're idealizing women and doing all these comics about women. The thing that's funny about a lot of these cartoons is usually the women are pretty either A, laid back, B, not really talking, C, sort of dopey. In the sense that the men get away with a lot. But sometimes every so often you'll read one and the woman will be like, she'll come out on top, which is kind of nice. Once in a while, you know what I mean? It's not always the men who manage to take advantage of the women. It's equal opportunity taking advantage of. Anyways, I don't know what more to tell you. There were some really great cartoonists in the Playboy albums. There was a total of eight or nine albums. If you can find them, you're going to find them at your used bookstores or online. I'm sure eBay probably has some of them. I don't know how much you're going to pay for them, though, because I got them at a used comic book store a long time ago. And they are definitely treasures in my collection. Like, I love them. I adore them. And they are so much fun to look at. And I'm very excited that Playboy put out that Shel Silverstein collection of his adult comics for Playboy. It's just called Silverstein Around the World. I'm sure you can find that anywhere. As well, there's an Eldon Dedini book that Fantagraphics put out in 2006 that I highly recommend. You can totally find that anywhere. There's also that 50 years of Playboy cartoon art. I recommend that, but to me, I'm a completist, and that's just a bit of an overview, whereas I'd much rather have more content than what the 50 years of Playboy does. But it's a nice little book, and it's definitely, if you want to get started into it, that's where to start. Also, and I didn't really mention it, and I should, is Harvey Kurtzman wrote and Will Eller illustrated an excellent comic series called Little Annie Fanny, which was kind of their take on Little Orphan Annie, and they got a lot of political commentary within the cartoon of this goofy sort of Annie girl. And it's beautiful artwork. Well, Elder Blue blows your mind. I mean, it's so nice. I hate using the word lush now because I've used it like a billion times. But that's exactly what it is. It's insanely lush. His work is just beautiful and bombastic in color, you know, like fluorescent pinks and bright oranges. And, you know, it's talking about the Vietnam War. It's talking about all sorts of stuff that's happening, you know, the summer of love and all those crazy things that were happening in the 50s and 60s. You know, Playboy was right in the pinnacle of it. So there was no censorship whatsoever directed towards their cartoonists, which, again, also is excellent. Yay, Hugh Hefner. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hefner, for putting out all these great cartoonists in your publication. From what I understand, they still do it, because I've picked up some new ones, and there's this guy, Dan Yeagle, that I really like, and they've got a lot of cartoonists still going at it, and you're always guaranteed to enjoy what they have inside of Playboy, always. Because even if I don't like the naked women, there's always some good writing, you know? Like, one time I picked up one and they had this big interview with Kurt Vonnegut. Playboy rules. Anyways, you're listening to CJLO 1690. This is the end of the show. We're going to play the Marvelettes for you. The song is called Playboy, and then we're going to go, there's nobody taking over still. I guess Incinerator is not coming. She'll be here maybe next week, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But enjoy what you hear, and thanks for listening. And next week, if all goes according to plan, we will have an interview with a representative from the San X merchandising company. If you don't know what that is, just look it up. SAN-X. It's my favorite merchandising company. It's so weird. Anyways, this is the Marvelettes, and I will see you or talk to you next week.